Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, dig it. Solid. Right on.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right, man. It's sunny outside, and that other who that goomer?
Yeah. So I got in my car and a little, and it dinged because it was below 40 degrees Fahrenheit out there. So it was a warning that maybe there'd be a slippery drive. What is it? It's September. What is it? Huh?
So this is how difficult a life Sandy leads. He's,
I've got a car that dings to tell me something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't drive me here.
Well, it could. It probably could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, would you ever purchase a car? Oh, I forgot to introduce you. It's Friday, and that means Friday's with Sandy Williams, my co-host. And so, Sandy, would you ever buy a car that drives itself?
No. No, you know, there's a joke. You know, there's like this guy that's saying, you know, I want to die like my grandmother. I mean, like my grandfather, you know, sound asleep. Not like my grandmother screaming when she sat behind him in the car. Yeah, that's what I think. That's what would happen in an autonomous car. You'd just be screaming.
Well, there are a lot of people who have them mm-hmm. and swear by them. But I don't know how you can, you know. I mean, just not ready for that, right? I mean, maybe.
I just figure that everything I've ever had has defects, electronic defects. You know, nothing works perfectly. So, you know, that's bad when you're going 65 miles an hour and you're sitting in the back seat of your car out of range of all the controls.
And we've seen, you know, several times or more where these things have been defective.
Yeah.
And people totally trusted them, and the outcome has not been pretty, especially when you're doing that on the expressway, right? And there are people who have kind of grown accustomed to it now. That kind of technology is unbelievable, but it's still a little early, right, would you say?
I think so. You know, I'm confident it is.
For you, it's too early.
I don't want people to be looking at a dash cam of my horrified face to try and, you know, it's like the black box to analyze. Why did this accident happen?
You know, I'm wondering how much extra that must be to get that technology in a new car.
What, the autonomous driving thing? Well, it's not actually, autonomous driving isn't allowed. I don't think in lots of places. I think you'll get a ticket if you're not sitting in the driver's seat.
Yeah, but it must cost to have it, right? I mean, it's.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't think anyone but Tesla has a car out that they would allege can do it. And I think Tesla. I think there are some parts of the country that have allowed those cars to be autonomously driven, but. Not here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, why are you talking about Tesla?
There's plenty of drivers who are vacant when they're driving from the driver's seat, much less, you know, no driver.
You know, while you're talking about Tesla, man, you know, I guess like any other automobile producers, I mean, they've got a lot of issues you know, that have been springing up. And I was reading where the batteries that have been supposed to last, what, 10 years? I don't know, however many years. But unfortunately, it's not the case. It's not happening.
I think there have been varying reports. Some people have complained their batteries are failing early. Others have suggested that batteries maybe will last longer than they initially thought.
Right.
My question is, what did you initially think? I don't know what the initial projections were. And, you know, I think the whole problem or issue associated with batteries has some maturing to do out there in the marketplace. Because I think what will ultimately end up happening is the battery will be owned by someone else. You'll lease the battery. You'll be able to go in to have your battery changed out. It'll be a non-problem that you'll basically make a monthly payment for.
And we still may be 10 years or more away from where that's a commonplace thing, that people are used to the batteries and the prices come down to the degree that, you know, it won't be a second thought, right?
Well, I don't know what percentage of the market right now in the United States electric cars are, but I'm sure it's single digit.
Right.
And so those cars aren't 10 years old yet, so they haven't really had an opportunity to test the durability of these batteries. And so it'll take years. It'll take several decades to figure out exactly the battery, you know, how long a battery lasts, what the issues are associated with replacing the battery, what it does to used car values.
You know, and at the same time, Sandy, we are seeing the stations where the electrical stations are starting to come into existence, and they're starting to move pretty swiftly with that. You say single digits of ownership, and that's probably likely the case. I do see a lot more Teslas on the market or on the street than normal, but I'm sure most of those are, you know, used.
It's the same guy. He's just driving around all the time.
You know,
just one. No, there clearly are a growing number of them, and Tesla's obviously the most common one. You know, there's going to be an issue associated with electricity, too. So the price of electricity is going to be dependent on the demand for it and the price of electricity in some places. Look at Europe. The price of electricity there is going way up because of the price of the gas necessary to make it.
Well, let's do this. Let's bring this caller on. Just bring him on, Connor, because we'll get more.
Is it Elon Musk?
Who do we have on the line?
Oh, good morning, Earl.
I figured that's who it was.
It's Elon.
I wish I was Elon.
It's David Musk, his brother.
I assumed it was you, David.
They put me in the well.
What's going on, my friend?
So really quickly, to Sandy's point, yes, it's going to take a long time with the whole battery situation. My whole concern, though, is this, and this has kind of not been reported as much. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with Moss Landing in California. And that used to be a natural gas plant, and that was then converted into essentially, you know, for, you know, green energy now, and they've had batteries and what have you. And what's happening, what they're finding out is even the battery storage at these facilities are catching on fire when it gets hot. And the toxins that are being released are very lethal. And so there's people that are up in arms with that. So they had to shut down, you know, whatever, you know, the power over there and what have you. I think that is a huge concern, along with the fact, and you just mentioned, Sandy, the price of energy has spiked in Europe. Well, Tesla just announced, just I think 2 days ago, there's going to be a huge spike in price to charge a Tesla in California now, because the energy costs there are starting to spike. And if you look at your We Energies bill, I don't know if people look at that closely, but the average person's electricity bill is going to go up like 15% alone come next year. And that's because we're still paying on, if you remember, like the coal plants and what have you, we put all those extra scrubbers on them. We're still paying on those, and now we're spending all this money on solar panels and wind farms and what have you.
So, Dave,
and unfortunately,
Unfortunately,
I was just going to say, you're going to see a big jump in energy prices in both electricity and natural gas coming in the near future here in Wisconsin.
Well, so David, let's do this. You can hang on because
sure.
I think we there's some stuff there. There's some meat on the bones. I think Sandy wants to, you know, have a snack. Got to go to a break.
Okay.
844-967-2789. Hang on, Dave. We'll be right back. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday is with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Dave from Mech One is hanging on. Dave, you talk about, before Sandy responds, you talk about the fact that, you know, the price of electricity is going to be going up, and then you kind of equate that with, well, the cost of, you know, the coal-fired plants and all those things. You know, Dave, the coal-fired plants are, you know, they're on their way out, right? Nothing's going to stop that. They're going out.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying.
Well, Dave is right, though, and this is sort of part of this whole regulated. I know too much about regulated utilities. I bored myself a good portion of my life with it. But, we even when they retire these plants, we have to pay for them, for the capital cost of them, even if they're shut down. So we end up paying for stuff that might be archaic, no longer needed, but was needed and was approved, and so that's what's happening with these Oak Creek plants. Plus, in fact, We Energy's got a very sweet deal, maybe an overly sweet deal, when they built them something called Power that guaranteed them a 13% return on equity for the capital costs of all those plants. So it's rich. Wisconsin's electric rates are probably higher than they would need to be, and they are directly tied as well to gas, because there's a pass-through in your electric bill for the energy needed to make the electricity.
Well, you know, I've always asked the question why, you know, in Wisconsin there basically is no competition. You go to Illinois, they've got how many different.
Well, there was no competition any place in the country until the 1990s, and then some states decided to open up for competition, at least at the what's called the wholesale level, and at the level of large users. There's no competition. If you're a residential owner, you have to buy from Commonwealth Edison in most of the Chicago region, and it's the same kind of monopoly provider. That was because it didn't make sense to have a double set of electric lines built and the whole infrastructure built, so they decided rather than do that, we'll have monopoly providers that are regulated. So that was the history of the electric industry.
Well, the question becomes who the regulators are.
Well, the regulators are the state, and you know, Wisconsin for a long time was really famed for having probably the best state public utility commission in terms of its track record.
Does that still hold true today?
Well, probably not. You know, they were very even-handed and certainly not overly bending in the direction of the utilities. I would guess in the last 25 years they've bent more strongly in the direction of the utilities. And Wisconsin used to, even though we were distant from the places where you would buy energy, like coal plants, Wisconsin used to have some of the lowest electric rates in the whole upper Midwest. Yeah. Now we have some of the highest.
Yeah. Dave?
Yeah, so I wanted to, that was my bigger point, is that we're getting kind of like dead cap space. If you're in a situation like what Sandy's saying, that here we made all these upgrades to the current power plants, and now they're being forced to shut down, but the customers, including, you know, everybody on your listening audience, are going to be paying many years going forward.
Incidentally, Dave, they aren't being forced to be shut down. The electric utilities decided to shut them down, and it's a complicated set of reasons, but one of them is that it would be required to put in even more expensive pollution controls.
Correct.
To keep them operating. But
right.
Also, it's just that they have become more expensive to operate than the alternatives, and the fact is that wind and solar is cheaper than coal, and they're trying to and coal is more expensive than gas, or has been until very recently when gas has gone way up in price. But it's a whole complicated, it's like a graduate school course in economic planning, this whole utility business, and it's enough to bore you even if you're interested in it. I won't bore the rest of the listening audience with it, but it's complicated. But I do think this, that electric automobiles have a lot of advantages. And if you've driven one or ridden in one, you even realize how exciting they are in terms of being fast cars. They don't make that great burbling noise that coming out of the exhaust that we're all used to with our gasoline combustion engines. But I think in the long run, people are going to buy electric cars because they prefer them. And the cost of the energy going into it, if you just do the analysis of how BTUs are utilized and how they flow through, electric would probably always be cheaper than gas because of the conversion efficiency of electricity as compared to gasoline. But I think that, yes, electric energy price for cars is going to go up. It's going to get closer to being like the price of gasoline for cars, particularly as more electric cars come out and gasoline gets cheaper because there's less demand. But my prediction is we're headed for electric, whether you like it or not, Dave.
Well, the other thing is this. Keep in mind that electricity is not taxed as much as well.
Wait a minute.
Electricity, what I mean by that is, like, you have federal and you have the
gasoline
state gas
taxes.
Tax.
Yeah, well, we have that.
Right.
That's for highways, but very soon there's going to be mileage taxes on electric cars to make
that's
it.
That's correct. That's the next thing I was going to say, was that will be the next thing that they'll throw at, on top of charging the car,
people who own cars ought to pay for the marginal cost of operating a car, right? So
listen, Dave, we got to go to a break. Thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Yes. Tony. And DJ Quick.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. I was telling Sandy that I've got a couple of really good friends who over the last several years moved down to Naples and Fort Myers, and in beautiful homes down there, right? And and it's actually paradise, right? I mean, on Earth, some of those areas down there, or was.
If you like water.
Yeah. And there,
in your basement.
in your
attic.
Well,
even.
What they liked was that constant 80 degrees.
Yeah.
Year-round.
No, I mean, there's plenty. Milwaukee has lots and lots. Wisconsin has lots of people relocated to places that fly into the Fort Myers Airport. And it's like Fort Myers and Sanibel Island and the Naples, Florida. I knew it was an Italian name.
Right.
Yeah. So all those places have lots of Wisconsinites, and those places have suffered mightily.
So Sandy, I reached out to one of them on yesterday, and actually a couple days ahead when we knew this was coming, talked to him. He still doesn't have any power. He was fortunate in Naples that his home didn't get flooded. But the neighborhood, it's been a pretty upscale neighborhood. It's been kind of... the other one lived in Fort Myers, and he's been completely wiped out. And so, but I was reading where 60% of the people who live in Florida don't have insurance for hurricanes.
I'm sure hurricane insurance has gotten very expensive as the level of these hurricanes and the broad swath of huge damage has gotten very broad in Florida. I'm sure that many insurance companies will not insure against the hurricane risk because of the fact that if they did, they would have so many claims in the insurance pool of Florida that the insurance would cost as much as the estimated cost of replacing a home.
So I got to thinking, so if 60% of the people who live in Florida don't have hurricane insurance, And there's hurricanes, I don't know how many times a year in Florida, each year they're coming, is a certain time of the season where you can rest assured they're going to be hurricanes. Then how do people survive there? People who aren't affluent.
They're rolling the dice. There are people. That's always happened. People build in floodplains because people build in California and places that are known to be probable mudslide areas. People roll the dice because they like the beauty. They have this economic value. The marketplace isn't penalizing them that much for building in those places. The government has tended to bail people out when they have these big disasters. They tend to come along and give a lot of money, but more recently, taxpayers have begun to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't be bailing people out who decide to build their houses in the floodplains in Louisiana, because we know that every time a big storm comes up, they're going to come back with a big claim. And the whole reason the government had to provide insurance is the insurance companies were pretty smart. They understood what the premium ought to be to cover that risk, and the premium was astronomical. And so these homeowners would say, hey, we can't buy private insurance. The premium is astronomical. Well, the reason the premium was astronomical is the risk was astronomical.
So I want to open the phone lines, and I want to get, and Sandy and I started doing this a couple of weeks ago, but I want to get four callers and right now to join the show in this next segment. And I want to ask you if you think it's the right thing for the government. President Biden said that the government is going to provide $38,000 for people who weren't insured for their property, the home itself, and then $38,000 more for the content. Now, I don't know how you measure what that is, because for different individuals, it's different. I'm going to say my content is worth $38,000 if my content was only worth $10,000, right? How do they measure that? And you as a taxpayer, phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Do you have any, druthers about You know, your resources.
What's interesting is the global climate change issue, okay, and how a lot of people, particularly some conservatives and some conservative business people, have argued it doesn't exist. Well, I can tell you that the insurance industry has been looking at this very carefully and has been very worried about the implications of global climate change because of the fact that they understood, and now it's proving out, that global climate change would cause much more astronomically expensive and risky types of storms, much bigger floods because storms would dwell over a particular place and dump huge amounts in one location, one big location. Hurricanes would become much more dangerous and damaging. And when you have large areas experiencing damage, it becomes very hard to insure it. Insurance is all about having 1,000 people paying premiums, would you know that the probability is that only 5 of them will experience accidents? And all of the 1,000 are willing to pay the premiums because they know that they can't afford the accident without insurance if they have it. So they'll pay a reasonable premium based on this probability issue. But if you're selling insurance to somebody, to 1,000 people, and the risk is 50% that all 1,000 of them will experience a loss because of a hurricane, now that premium has to look very, very astronomical.
So insurance, again, 844-967-2789 is the number. So when you talk about insurance, Sandy, I've always looked at it this way. So even though I carry it, right, you have to have it. So I look at it this way. So the insurance company is betting that something's not going to happen. No. And you and I are betting that it is.
No, the insurance company knows something is going to happen, but they know that it's not going to happen to everyone. And they have pretty good, they have these actuaries, that's the name of these people who do the statistical analysis. And these actuaries figure out what the probability is of what level of loss will be experienced in the group of people paying insurance. So the insurance company knows something's going to happen. They also have an idea of what the probability is it's going to happen. And they know what the probable cost is of all of that happening, so they figure out what the premium needs to be from this broad pool. It's the reason why the Obamacare program initially was going to require that everyone participate in the insurance pool, because now you have a much bigger number of people paying a much smaller premium because they know that everyone isn't going to get sick. They know who's going to get sick. When you get rid of that mandatory aspect, you begin to have an insurance pool of people who are much more probable to get sick. That's why they bought the insurance.
So that's why when you're strapping 20-year-old, 22-year-old buck, and you buy life insurance, and for
it's cheap,
yeah, for a $3 million policy is $20 a month for some guy 20 years old, because
right,
the insurance company is pretty much aware,
yeah,
that at 20 years old, you know, unless you're in an automobile accident,
right,
or something like that, you know, you're going to outlive that. But a guy like you or I goes and looks for a $3 million policy, and they say, wait a minute.
It's going to cost a little more.
Yeah, they're not in the business of losing money.
Exactly.
Right.
They're in the business of, actually, it's a service. Lloyd's of London was started long ago because when ships set sail from England to the United States or wherever, there was a probability that some of them would not make it.
Right.
Not all of them, just some of them. But the people who had all the contents in that ship and the people who owned that ship couldn't afford to take the risk that their ship would go down. And so they bought insurance against that risk, and Lloyd's provided it. And so Lloyd's started this whole concept of insurance. Well, I don't know if they started it, but they were early in the game of analyzing this whole concept of an insurance pool, a big pool of people who are insuring against a possible risk, and they need to pay a premium because they need to avoid the risk happening to them, and the insurer figures out what the premium needs to be to cover enough premiums to pay off the probable losses.
So the projection, early projection of the losses in Florida is $140 billion. $1,000.
Right.
And that's just from what they're seeing with the naked eye. Clearly, that can move up to $200 billion, $250 billion in the long run. And so the question becomes, Sandy, as I was you and I were talking before we even went on the air, what insurance company is going to, you know, now has to pay this because, you know,
Well, that's why only 60% of those people have insurance, because they went to ask for insurance and the insurer said, we don't give that insurance, or they're going to say it's very, very expensive. But once it gets very expensive that no one buys it, they're going to stop selling it because it would be too expensive to organize the whole insurance pool policy thing if you're not really going to be able to sell it for the premium. I mean, it's one of the reasons, it's one of the big reasons why people, the places that have these high risks caused by global climate change of calamitous loss will become depopulated, because people won't insure the risks that they're undertaking by living there. The weather risks,
right.
The huge damage risks. It's much easier to insure against tornadoes because they just put their finger down and only some people experience it. But when you're insuring against floods that are caused by massive scale hurricanes and massive scale typhoons and big weather conditions, and you're insuring against the kind of damage they cause, that's a whole different story. And so flood insurance is very hard to get in places that are likely to flood.
You know, Sandy, all of these people have transplanted there. And you know, our government itself has a finite amount of dollars to deal with situations like this itself, right? You can say, well, it's the United States of America, and so what's $150 billion? What's $200 billion? This is the United States government. Well, you know, this is one place, right? This is Florida.
I mean, you know, I think everyone who doesn't live in those places looks at it and says, why should my tax dollar go to allow this person to live in this unreasonably treacherous location because they like the lake? For instance, they like the oceanfront. If they like the oceanfront so much, they're going to have to just suffer the risk themselves, and I'm not going to pay them for it because they could live in Iowa and not have anything like that kind of a risk.
You know, Sandy, your point is just so well taken, because, you know, and you see more and more people heading down to those paradise kind of places. And then people say, hey, man, you got to come here, man. It's just, you know what I mean? It's heaven on earth, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so people go down, they enjoy it.
Well, I mean, I think that's all fine. I just don't think that the U.S. government should subsidize the risks associated with doing that. The marketplace is what handles all of that. And there's already been discussion about this, particularly in places like Louisiana, where people have built and rebuilt and rebuilt and rebuilt in the floodplain. And each time they rebuild, they do it based on public dollars that are supporting them, because there isn't private flood insurance in some of these places that are so very likely to flood.
But that conversation that we're having right now is a legitimate one. And I don't know, Sandy, who is going to how that can possibly be enforced.
Well, I think that there is a compassionate way to look at this, which is the government could come in and compensate people to relocate away from high-risky areas. So instead of compensating them to rebuild their house in the risky location that now has this very high probability of suffering damage in the future, I think the appropriate thing to do would be to help those people relocate away from it if they are unwilling to sustain the risk uninsured.
So now, Sandy, then you carry it to the next level or the next step. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday is my guest host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I can't help but think about, you know, tourism. And that's kind of what Florida's based on. And you don't make that up over the next 3 years or more. It's not just Naples and Fort Myers. It's those little islands. It's all of the rest of that you know, that the state of Florida is going to be in a horrible financial strait.
Well, you know, climate change is maybe going to, when you and I were young, Milwaukee was 11th or 12th biggest city in the country,
right.
And now we're in the 20-something, and it's, and almost every city that's bigger than us is south of the Mason-Dixon line. Most of those cities that have grown so much are because they're such idyllic, nice, warm places. Many of them are places that are either in the southwest or in some of these, in the Houston and,
right,
and Florida.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these places are going to be now facing extreme problems based on the climate change. So the climate drew everyone down there. They were able to move after air conditioning became so available because it could compensate for the terribly hot summers, and so they could have this heaven that they talked
right
about with air conditioning. And suddenly this heaven is got some hellish qualities to it. The Southwest, the hellish quality is no water.
Right.
Which is causing, you know, fires, sort of the fire and brimstone of Hades, but also no water.
Right.
You know, the Lake Mead, Lake Powell, the sources of the Colorado rivers, now going to become the source of some, maybe, I don't know what, interstate warfare based on the shortage of water. And the Southeast has got this hurricane problem that leads to an insurance problem. It leads to all this potential risk associated with these huge weather disturbances. And so maybe Milwaukee will return to being the 12th or 13th time. I'm being
right
silly now, but Milwaukee has lots of advantages as compared to those places with respect to its weather future.
You know, Sandy, if you extrapolate what you're saying 20 years from now,
mm-hmm,
25 years from now, what you're saying is going to, I mean, there's not going to be some miracle that those things turn around, right? I mean,
well, it's already, for instance, California, based on expenses of various kinds, is seeing an exodus of people. Many of them are going to Texas, but it's seeing an exodus of population. There's going to be an exodus of population from a number of these population centers where water is disappearing, because it turns out water is pretty important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the same is going to be true with respect to the Southeast, which has the these huge hurricane disturbances and this loss of housing. If you lose a house and you don't have insurance, you're not going to go back to that house.
No. Well, you know, you just kind of, you know, as you know the last, now it's a couple of days, and you see these people and everything they have is gone. And part of you, your heart bleeds for them. But the other side of it is, as you see them, you know, the human part of all of us, man, that to see people lose everything.
No, I mean, it's tragic. It's tragic for anyone to lose everything, even if you have a lot.
Right.
Well, when you lose a big part of it, or a house goes down, you know that a house is more than just a place. It's
right,
a home. But, you know, Naples is a bastion of wealth, quite frankly, in many of these communities along the Florida coastline. Florida is an unusual state. If you go to Florida and travel along the coast, you think everyone's rich. As soon as you get 20 miles inland, you think everyone's poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's a two different universe kind of a state in which there's affluence and poverty living cheek by jowl, but the affluence all lives on the coastline.
You know, Sandy, when these kinds of things happen, and it's right behind Puerto Rico being leveled again for the second time in, what, 10, in 6 years? It was leveled under Donald Trump, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And now it's here it is a few years later. It's leveled again. And so the United States now is kind of caught between the people in Puerto Rico are saying, hey, don't forget us.
Yeah.
And so, but there's a finite amount of dollars for those things, right?
Well, I mean, the fact is that all this stuff is sends a clear message. Well, there's climate change ongoing. These kinds of things are happening with far greater frequency and with far greater enormity than they did in the past. And all the people who are deniers about global climate change will need to wake up to the fact that if there was a way to slow it down so that these very costly disturbances wouldn't occur, there's going to be an economic impact one way or the other. There's going to be an economic impact associated with all these geographic areas with this huge impact on it, an exodus of people, calamitous costs associated with disasters, huge increases in insurance costs, all kinds of economic things that can be measured. Or there's going to be economic, if we can slow it down with investment by human beings in a different way of operating that would slow down global climate change and slow down the frequency of these disturbances, that'll have a different economic impact. Those should be compared against one another. And it's pretty clear that we're getting to the point where we need to start investing in slowing this down, because if we have huge storms every year, every place there can be a storm, which appears to be what's happening more and more, that's an intolerable experience.
You know, Sandy, we're talking about that damage on the coastal parts of Florida, but Ian is still moving and causing more damage in different parts and picking up steam again, as hurricanes can do. And so that's not the end of what the cost is going to be. It's only the beginning. Got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You, too, can join the conversation. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.